Welcome to Therapy Nurse On-Call. I'm Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. I will talk cast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444 to follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Are you going to participate on the web? Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. And start to call 17702 or SFU on call or start for the universe on call, and you will find us there. But if you want the best online experience, you want to go to twitch.tv at twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will join the chat room and see my lovely face as we do it. We do this live. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, follow on the Twitters. Got the podcasting account, which is sfuoncall. My personal account, which is Paul Franz, PAULFRNZ. There's no T in that. And of course, there's the Franz Games, which is my business account, FRNZGMES. Now, of course, if you are on Blue Sky, the new, social network. I'm also on there. So you want to find my personal account / business account. That's going to be Franz Games, FRANZGMS.com. Also, SFU on call is currently available. It's still there. It's currently not available. It's there. I have an account called SFU on call. BSKY.social. Wow, sorry. So you can join me there. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Jean was out sick last week, so orders that she usually gathers up and puts them out were delayed some. Also, any proofreading that she was doing probably also got delayed. Yes, you can do some stuff from home, but my guess is, depending on how sick she was, she might have just been laying in bed and sleeping, just watching TV, that kind of thing, and just kind of regaining her strength, that kind of thing. And of course, this week on found the online store in juxtaposition to the Klingon pin last week. It's going to be the Romulan pin this week. This is also $5. They are really beautiful pins that if you like the Romulans or you like the Klingons, they're only $5. You can get them, you can put them right there, you know, on your shirt, you put it on your lapel or wherever you want to put it, just to show off that you are a perfect, you are supporting the Romulan or Klingon Empire. You might do one, both, have one on each side. You know, that'd be kind of cool. But anyhow, moving on and forward to the SFU Online tournament, it's still going on. We've got Bill Scheller, who is in the finals, but we're still waiting for the other games to catch up. Not much happening when it comes to the client. I really need to work on getting it, the update out the door, and I really want this one actually to be the one where I change servers. That's good in some places, for some people, bad for other people. Because I've been on this one server way too long. It really needs to be moved before something bad happens. Because I like to change up servers every 5 years, just for the plain simple reason that that's how long the first one went before the actual hardware it was running on died. I do not wish this. I do not want to repeat this experience. Thank you very much. But moving on, running forward to the library report. Not much happening there this week. The only thing that actually happened is that I was, there was a bug reported for the base station where you would try to do allocations. But as soon as you allocated damage to one of the phaser threes, all damage allocation would stop. And I found out what the issue was, that there was a bug in the SSD itself, which caused the issue. In theory, Maybe the client could have handled it better, but I'm not. The root cause was that the definition was incorrect. It had one phaser three, but there was two designators, so the code went, you know, assumes that both of us are the same, and it weren't, they weren't. So that's what caused the issue. I fixed the base station. Also, I fixed the ground-based PF, ground-based base for the PFs, and also the Stellar Fortress base. I fixed that one too. Now, did I fix them correctly? I don't know. I just made it so that the number of boxes matches the number of designations. Now, is that correct? I don't know. Because I don't actually have... I know that for the base station, I got it correct. The Stellar Fortress, I'm not quite sure. And the ground base, I'm not sure either. I have to double check on those. I'm not concerned right now with those. They will be fixed. If you are going about to use either one, I don't think there's any campaign that's using the Stellar Fortress. I really don't think so. That's a huge, huge base. So I don't think anyone's using that. The ground-based PF base, that someone might be using. If somebody's using that, please tell me to double check on that, and I'll jump on that immediately. If not, I will look at it as soon as I possibly can. And also, there's no updates to the FedCom library. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, so Paul Friends, welcoming you, the Starfleet Universe, on call. And tonight, we've got me, of course. We got Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
We have... Jeff, say hi, Jeff.
Evening, everybody.
Hi, we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
Awesome. Okay, he's still sleeping there. I'm seeing over my left-hand shoulder, I see my cat. For those of you actually watching the video. He seems
very
comfy.
Looks like he's on guard duty.
Yeah, and the thing is, he got his treat, so he's settled. You know, he's settled. So he's happy. Well, cat, geez. Just go into the kitchen anytime after 8 o'clock and it's like, okay, treat time. It's like, no, it's not treat time. It's not treat time for another hour. Anyhow, we're going to start off this evening actually with a topic I have for tonight. I'm assuming that most people out there really aren't going to be playing in the 500 BPV tournament. And if you are, and I'm pretty sure this the fleets will be, after they've been checked off by the judge, they will be then announced. At least that's my assumption. But anyway, good Lord knows, this wouldn't be the first time I've talked about either a ship selection or whatever before a tournament has begun. So tonight we're gonna go through it. Unfortunately, 500.
Before you get started, though.
Yes.
Because I don't know if you, I think I heard a bit of last week's podcast, and you were talking about the tournament, and now it was pointed out in the thread that advice given to the guy organizing it is to ignore the comments of anyone who's not taking part in the tournament. So I've been trying to hold back in terms of actually getting into the nitty-gritty of my thoughts on it. But what I did want to do is I did a post referring to Steve Petrick's work, because
right.
you as you know, the recent issues of Captain's Log have had various battle group articles. Mm-hmm. Those battle group articles have been much more recent than the material that the tournament organizer has been working on in terms mm-hmm. of like what unit types are allowed and what size classes and what empires and all that kind of stuff and how the 550 points are used and so on. So all I was basically trying to get at is that those data points, I think, would be relevant in terms of trying to unpack what would be a good way to handle it that basically was mostly as most up to date as possible. Because I think it was said that the original rules were back in Captain's Log 15, and a whole lot of the game has existed, has been added since then.
Right.
So I was just wondering if you had a moment to have a look at that. And
yes, it did. And we actually, as we mentioned, here's the big thing. The big thing, the big difference between Petrick's battle forces and our, and the tournament, the main difference, and I think it's a critical difference between the two, is that the battle forces are for an unknown scenario. And I'm just going back to the Capsule Double Nickel, which we submitted our battle forces for. Of course, Double Nickel still hasn't been released yet, but it was for an unknown scenario, and then we got our matchups, and then we had to describe what are the what would be
what our attack strategy would be. Yes.
Right. How would we defeat this opponent, given these different this scenario? Now, overall, the scenarios are, you know, or vary when it comes to battle forces. Like in some cases, you're around a gas giant, or just this, you know, this or this or this. And most of, and sometimes you don't even know what the scenario is until they say, you know, in fact, you usually don't know what the scenario is until you've already submitted your fleets. And then at that point, and then you get the matchups, and then you have to describe how you're going to deal with the scenario and your opponent. Well, in this 500 BPV game, you know, the tournament, the scenario, i.e., this is open. There's no terrain to speak of, so it's open space combat. And so the scenario is known. The only thing we don't know, what our opponent is going to be flying. So, yeah, and the degree that the battle forces do the same thing in that degree, that you don't know what your opponents are going to be flying, but at the same time, there's an added degree in the battle forces is that you won't know what the scenario, actual scenario is, where you're going to be flying these ships. Until later, which I can totally understand, given the whole idea of the battle forces is to come up with a battle force unbeknownst to what situation you're going to be placed in.
Yeah, they don't want min maxing.
Right. Yeah, because if you know, in the case of, you know, if you're going to be in an asteroid field or you're going to be flying around a gas giant, these kind of things might change the way you're going to, what you would select your fleet to be.
Kind of like a fog
of war. Right. Selecting an all Orion force for the Double Nickel, only to find out that you really need a ship with a lot of sensors and labs, which you don't have.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well, the thing is, though, is that on the BBS, you can see the requirements for CL-55, and also you can review back the one that was used for CL-54. But if you go back over the last several issues worth, despite the fact that, yes, it is true that each one is, you know, they spring the surprise on you in terms of what the scenario is, and also they kind of tell you ahead of time, you can or cannot take, like, for example, one round would basically say no size class 3 or
right,
XYZ or whatever.
Right. You have limitations on the ships that you actually can select for your fleet, yes.
But a lot of the formatting in terms of how the scenario is presented in terms of which empires you're allowed to have and whether or not you're allowed to take such and such things for them or such unit types like minesweepers or commando ships and so forth, whatever. A lot of those carry over from one battle group scenario thing to another.
Right.
And one key thing is that because, like, the most recent Captain's Log scenarios, they allow things like Caravians and Carnivals. They allow Sultorians. They allow Omega and Magellanic Cloud Empires. They allow mercenary task forces, but they do specify that you can't take a mercenary ship with another empire. So, for example, if you want to take an Orion ship with a Federation task force, you're out of luck. But if you want to take an all Orion force, you can, under the other ones that are done. But because the Captain's Log 15 rules were written before a lot of these empires existed, or maybe they weren't like fleshed out in quite the same way, the current crop of empires that people are being allowed, I think you yourself were talking about this, that you weren't able to take Saltorians, but you would have been able to have the under the guidelines, because, for example, in recent Captain's Log battlegroup scenarios, it has been allowed to take certain factions like Saltorians, even though the scenarios usually take place before Y1A2. But the key difference is that in most cases, those Saltorian task forces are assumed that they're still in transit. So they don't get T-bombs and they don't get like they can't get the ships that were basically created with help from the Klingons. So, for example, the concept of putting a third boom on the Saltorian ships, like to turn a frigate into a Lunite cruiser, that only happened because the Klingons had the computer bank capacity to be able to run the balance studies in order to be able to make sure the ship could function with its warp fields interacting, whatever. And the Saltorians either couldn't or hadn't thought of it back in the home galaxy to do that. So you can't have a new light cruiser, but you can have the regular destroyer and frigate and so on. So in theory, if a more battlegroup-esque template was being written, then you would look at those like samples, like the two that are on the BBS, and those would be the way in which the various guidelines would be presented, rather than the more kind of outdated one that was in CL15. So, for example, if you did want to take a Saltorian, then, you know, depending on what the organizer would say, then they could basically say, yes, okay, it's the same as in CL54, 55, or whatever it is, and or Andromedan for that matter, or something else. And then you'd have a kind of more contemporary way to approach the squadron setup compared to what I've seen so far. But again, I'm trying not to labor the point too much. I labored a lot already, but because it's really up to the people taking part. But it does seem a shame that already on the BBS, somebody else was wanted to take Paravians, but they can't because they didn't exist back on CL15. And you yourself were basically that you would have liked to take a different faction. So had the same allowances been in place that are in the current battle groups, then those factions would be available, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense.
So it's just that's kind of like the main thing I was getting at.
Okay, but I understand that. Now, obviously, if you kept an eye on that thread, you'll notice that the rules have been modified. Originally, the Captain's Log Note 15, you had fixed fleets. Here are the fleets that have been vetted, and these are checked off. Pick one. Versus this one, which they're trying out a 500 BPV fleet with these limited empires and going from there. Now, in Captain's Log 15, they've had the Andromedans. You know, they've had some additional ones, and I'm willing to bet there is. I'm letting it go for this one because, remember, this is the first time we're trying this. The absolute first time we're trying for SFB. Now, when it comes to fleet battles for a tournament, that of course, that's been done multiple times using Federation Commander. In fact, even online, we've done it. I've talked about it in the past, which is that in the past, doing that, one way that is different and from field testing, actually playing in the tournaments, and creating these tournaments and playing the tournaments online using Federation Commander. One of the things that we found out was, okay, what they would do is they would modify things via offsets, ratios, multiplier. That's it. Multiplier. That's what I'm looking for. Multiplier. so that in some cases the ships were worth more of certain empires are worth more than their actual BPV that are listed on the ships. And depending upon which empire, they had different multipliers. Sometimes they'd be the multiplier of one. Sometimes they're a multiplier of like 1.10, you know, so they have a 10% increase. And this has been done over multiple times of running this tournament. And what I'm getting at is that this is the first time through this tournament, and it based off the original Captain's Log 15, yes. But other than the initial rules are there, yeah. Ship selection is totally different. And I'm giving the judge and the organizer, Jeff Clark, the grace to say, okay, we're going to start with these. These are going to be the empires to start off with. After we've completed one of these, and we've learned our lessons from what works, what doesn't work, and go on to the next one. Next one, hopefully they'll have the ability to expand it to more of the empires, because I'm sure there's some people that would like to play the Carnivans, the Pravians, the Seltorians, possibly even maybe even the Omega, some of the Omega races, bring those in. Now, do I think that'd be a good idea? No, I don't think that'd be a good idea. But, and especially because in the case of the Omegas, if you have them in the Alpha, where most of their Alphas, not that the obvious thing is that the kids use the Omegas, they'll get their butt kicked. But not just that, the issue then becomes most people don't know the Omega weapons, so. That presents a problem in that category.
Well, I guess that's where, because a lot of the current crop of Omega ships are more like middle year ships in Alpha. So if you'd set the dial back to Y150 maybe instead of Y180, then you'd be having Hydron and Xinti and other kind of ships, whatever, basically fitting in kind of closer to what you see in Omega. And then you wouldn't have things like plasma sabos either. You wouldn't have the Speed 32 drones, whatever.
Right.
And also for Tachyon missile users, they'd have only a certain level of the missile capability as well. So it'd be a little bit fairer that way. Although I guess the Magellanic Cloud Empires, because they developed their technology a bit earlier before the Andromedans show up at least. And
right.
So yeah, they'd still be quasi okay-ish and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But But I mean, maybe it would be better in any case to have like all Omega or all LMC tournaments rather than mismatching them with Y180 Alpha. Because when you think about it, even in Alpha, if it was Y175 or Y178 Alpha, then you wouldn't have Speed 32 drones or Plasma Sable. So things would be a bit closer to what you see in the battle groups anyway. Because I don't think we've had a battle group that's been in Y180. They've mostly tried to stick in the Y170s because I guess they don't want people slinging Sable Plasma around too much. But, as you say, in the long run, it does open up some interesting possibilities.
Right.
For what very little it's worth. I definitely think that leaning more heavily into what the template of the battle group rules have been for those campaigns, I think, would be a good idea. Although, actually, one final thing I'll say is that if the Paravians were allowed in the current campaign, or the Carnivans for that matter, because in Y180, the Carnivans get Speed 32 Death Bolts. So I'd argue that they'd still keep up pretty well with their Xinti and Laren rivals. But the Paravians don't have a stable quantum wave torpedo. So they do get the heavy battlecruiser in Y180, but I'd be curious to see whether there's a fall off in terms of like how effective they are relative to their a Plasma Empire tournaments. Group 500 or 550 PPV.
Right. The difficult.
It'd be interesting to see whether that's true or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. The difficulty, obviously, even in this current tournament, and one of the rules is no conjectural ships. And Carnivons and Paravians in Y-180 would be conjectural because they were they're gone, especially you know, so
pain in the neck, but it's the truth,
right? Exactly. So the current tournament, well, they could not be.
See, Fetrick usually says that, because he usually says that for the context of the battle groups, the fleets presented in Module C6 or other modules like that are available. And in the context of those alternate timelines, so for example, if there's a ship that's no longer in service with the Paravians or Carnivons by Y1, whatever, then they can't have it because in the context of those Lost Empire universes, they're out of service, they don't exist. Or they don't exist yet if it's like Y180 of the scenario set in Y175.
Right.
But I should note that in recent battlegroup scenarios, under those contexts, they have allowed an Orion task force that, Jeff? Were you the one who you submitted it? There was like an Orion force that had quantum wave torpedoes.
Yeah, that was
it
mine.
It was allowed because... that's right. The ruling was that because those ships are quote-unquote real in those timelines, either the Lost Empire ones from Module C6 or the Reflection Universe ones from, or the early Warp ones from Module R4J, then it's a technology that those alternate Orions would have, so they were permitted to exist. So in theory, a similar thing could be done for the tournaments here, where if it's like an impossible ship or one that wouldn't exist in any timeline, at that point of in that year at least, then they still can't have it. But if it's a ship that would otherwise function quote unquote normally, then you'd be able to have access to it under the same guidelines that the battle groups allow. So that's one of the points I was trying to get to as well. So since the precedent has been made, yes.
Yeah, but at the same time, the battle groups, how many have we done? 10? Maybe more than that? I forget how long Patrick has been running. It was not running, but have been having those in the different captain's logs issues. I'm not sure when we first had battle groups and the captain's logs. It's been a while.
I want to say it's been at least 20, because I remember like even some of the earlier captain's logs had them, because back then it was SFB only, but then once Federation Commander came along, they started doing a parallel battle groups, for one for SFB and one for FedCom.
Yeah.
But in recent years, there's been a shift towards theming them more, because I think it used to be that they just say, here's a certain number of points and do whatever. It wasn't necessarily structured the way it is lately.
Right.
But now it's getting, in recent years, it's been more kind of sophisticated in terms of the approach. So you can see, from Captain Sog 49, 50, 51, 52, and so on, those have gotten kind of better and better in terms of... and also, it seems that they've kind of moved away from, because there have been issues of Captain's Log where the scenario was basically a solo scenario because you were dealing with some sort of monster or like an automated thing or some sort of or whatever it was. But more lately, it's been kind of more
first contact situation kind of thing.
You're playing against the other participants. Yeah, but now it's more like you're participating against the other participants in it. So I guess maybe they're more fun having those. And I don't disagree. Yeah. But as long as there's an even a number of participants, because some years there's maybe there's like an odd number, and that odd person either gets left out or they get, maybe random against, 500 Fraley shuttles or something like that, and the Pararista. And I feel like I've gone against my own statement about not wanting to lean too much into it, but as you were saying. For the current tournaments, it's the training wheels, I guess, are still on in terms
right,
of
right, right, exactly. The point
that functions the way that the FBI ones have.
Right.
But,
the point I was getting to is basically the point I was getting to is basically that there's a lot. They've had a lot more experience with the battle forces, and learned from early on, and so forth, and prove this. And change this and so forth, and allowed this and this, especially when they want to increase the amount of participation, maybe get some more interesting fleets, more interesting matchups in some cases. And that's great, but this is the first time. So like any anytime a tournament's first done, you need to learn from it, and hopefully we'll be able to learn from it, from the good aspects, bad aspects. Possibly we might go, you know, we need, because currently this is a pretty large map, and I think that's great. I think that's gonna really help the plasma players. Actually, it could be hurt the plasma players, but it allows people, you know, not to play in the fishbowl. So tactics change in that case. Now, we might have run into the issue of not aggression. You know, and Lord knows that, you know, things, people that are going to be playing plasma, they have one additional benefit compared to those playing drone races, which is they can't run out of plasma. But of course, even with drones, even though they'll have reloads, because my understanding, I don't see that explicitly saying no reloads. If we have reloads, then they're gonna have a lot more drones to use, and of course, then there's the special drones and all that kind of thing. But anyhow, yeah,
talk about a kettle of fish.
Yeah. So
the can of worms.
Right. Exactly. So we're gonna see how does this whole work, all this work. You know, when it comes to actually an open space battle, does it work? You know, or do we go with a floating, you know, a floating map, but we have a planet in the middle of a map to hold people fixed to a location. Of course, then people could use that minor train, the planet, to make sure that, you know, that to possibly eliminate some of the drones, or use that as terrain for certain things. Obviously, one rule if they ever do something like that would be, okay, you're not gonna be allowed to land on the planet, but it will act as terrain, and therefore the planetary rules apply. You know, when it comes to line of sight and things like that. So, to me, that'd be interesting. But first things first, let's get through this one now, so that we can learn. Lord knows.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking about the Omega tournament and having, you know, the Omega matchups and so forth. You know, we're still haven't gotten that one right. You know, we still haven't got the balance right on those. So, moving on.
Part of the issue with those is because they're historical ships, because they're basically having to be invented to kind of fit the template of a standard, like a quote unquote tournament ship.
Right.
And also because I guess some of the weapons are designed to work in an electronic warfare environment. Actually, that's one thing, just to clarify, is this 500 or 550 point, whatever, is it using regular EW,
like, yes,
standard SFB, or is it using more kind of restricted? So, yeah.
No, so, it's using regular EW. You have your rack maneuvering. You've got everything. And the one thing which I wanted to bring up, which I think is a mistake in my mind, and that in this tournament, the one thing that I did notice is that they did not disallow scouts, which I understand. that makes up for very, very difficult choices here. Do you have a scout and have that additional EW, the electronic warfare, with all those special sensors that you could use to add more ECM or more ECCM to cut through, you know, the electronic warfare? Can, you know, do you do that, or do you rely on your own? Do you want more weapons? Because obviously, if you have a scout, you're gonna have less weapons.
Yep.
That's a trade-off.
Well, there is that Galactic Survey Cruiser that Eddie Crisfield is taking, and that thing's pretty flexible. So it's, I feel like it's a little bit top-heavy. I mean, like, in terms of, like, how many, because you were mentioning yourself in the thread about how many size Class 3 ships people should allow.
Yep.
But I think that, ironically enough, I think the Magellanic Cloud has the right of it when it comes to, like, it has specific rules where after you take your flagship, you have to take three size Class 3, four ships, and then you're allowed a second size Class 3. So, I mean, that might be a little bit too extreme for Alpha or Omega, but something similar where basically you have to take maybe one or two size Class 4 and then another size Class 3. Oh, so that the onus is on an actual squadron rather than a top-heavy thing.
Well, that's why they made
it. And also, no more than one flagship, because I think his previous one had a CLC and a BC, and it's like the CLC itself is a leader variant. So, I mean, I know, like, I think in Fenton Empire, for example, there are rules where if you have dedicated like production of separate leader or command leader variants, like a warcruiser leader, you can't build it until you've built like something like between 3 to 5 of the standard ones. So you have to have a squadron for it to lead. So I kind of wonder, like, if there should be a similar thing here where you've got your flagship, sure, but then after that, you have to have a certain number of ships and then a leader of those ships. You can't just like stock up on leaders.
Well, yeah, that was one thing I was looking into early on when he announced the 500 BPP tournament. And that is using, what was it now, what the rules are, but basically command and control rules, where I didn't get a chance to actually read through it, but I suggested early on disallow size class twos because that's for a 500 BPV fleet. That's a pretty large chunk. That's like one. That's half your fleet right there.
Size class two. Okay, so you take the Dreadnought Plus, and then in order to make it a quote unquote fleet, you equip it with 20 supernumerary shuttles of some kind or another. No, that doesn't work.
Right. Exactly. That's why it's like, okay, no size class two. Because two limited size class three. So you're not going to have a basic size class three squadron is the whole idea. It's more of a fleet. And with a minimum, at least you have to have at least one size class four ship. And I can see that because of the big issue, of course, size class fours is, with size, two size class three and a size class, you know, these are limited to, you're almost kind of required to get a size class four, because I don't think there's any size class three ships that are like 200 over 200 points. Even with fast drones, having to pay the cost for fast drones and things like that. And actually, this one, true carriers, yeah. PF tenders, yeah. Mine layer sweepers, monitors. I never thought about it. They came up with monitors later on and figuring out all the limitations on the ships that you can select. They said, oh, the monitors? Like, oh, geez, yes. Because I forget if monitors are size class 2 or size class 3. I think it might be 3. But, you know,
they're a weird thing. Most of them are size class 2. They look a lot like a battle tug refit, but at the same time, they're the Starfleet battles equivalent of Liberty ships with guns bolted on. They are. It's funny because about the only time you ever really see them in use is either one in really specialized scenarios, or two, in the beginning of F&E, when you don't really have anything better than monitors for system patrol craft.
Right. And the whole idea of monitors, obviously, is defense. So it's got a lot of weapons. It can't move very fast, but it has a lot of weapons.
Nope. And the one other interesting thing is, if memory serves, almost every single monitor out there can hit on impulse power.
I had to check that one. I don't know about that. Wow.
Because as I recall, the basic design is you get 6 warp and 6 impulse and a scad of reactors, either standard or warp, depending on whether you're using photons or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they got rid of Yes.
They did add such things as light monitors in recent SFB modules, but I think actually, because in Shapeways, I mean, back in Shapeways 1.0, I don't know if they've actually gone through with it, but there had been talk about doing Empire-specific monitor designs so that you weren't just using the generic Federation-style monitor thing. You'd actually have, like, a Klingon monitor would actually look like a ship that the Klingons would build and so on.
Right.
I have to double-check about that head thing, because I think some of them you're not allowed to head at all. Like, they're basically stuck. Like, they're purposely meant to be kind of thing, because that's actually another thing to go back to the battle groups, is that they're usually barred entirely from those kind of
squadrons. You might be right. I'm thinking...
So,
I haven't looked at those rules in 20-something years, so you'll have to forgive me if I've got a little bit here or there. Maybe if they can do EM under impulse power.
That would make more sense. Also, they got...
But there is also... if you got an ISC fleet there, they can have a command cruiser for 220 points, I believe. So but they're overly pricey compared to most Alpha Empires anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that's the ISC. If you don't bring the gun line, you didn't do it right.
But
if I may interject here, I did a little playing around with some of the rules, looking at this tournament. I noted that the Vudar could be an outlier, but their war cruiser is 125 points. They could bring in four war cruisers, and that's a pretty decent sized squadron right there. They could also substitute one war cruiser for a frigate scout, because that's actually their only scouts are the frigate or a survey cruiser.
Yeah, well, the biggest problem with war cruisers is, aren't there some war cruisers size class 3?
They are.
Most
yes.
of them.
And you're only allowed two.
Yeah, so unfortunately, the Vudar have a reduced fleet size because of that. They've only got one or two fleets they possibly can bring to the battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Hydrans actually are another one that umbrage with. Because the limitations on fighters... means they aren't going to bring in any of their BCHs, because all of their BCHs have casual PF mech links. And the fighter caps mean, first off, obviously no true carriers, but it also limits their fusion fleet. So they are basically forced to bring in a Hellbore fleet. And as a result, there's only a few fleets they can actually bring to the battle also.
Yeah. You're limited to a squadron and a half. 18 fighters?
That's two Rangers and no Lancers.
Yeah, well, I'd have to look at the Hydrans myself. But remember, the one thing, we really didn't want to have attrition units in at all. But
unfortunately, if you're going to play Lyran or Hydran, you've got to do it. Especially year 180.
Yeah. At 180, the Hydrans are, if you don't let them have, attrition units, then why bother?
Not only that, nobody can bring in heavy fighters.
Right. No heavy fighters, and you're only allowed two size class 3s. What do the Hydrans have left? I mean, they don't really have a lot in the cupboard past that.
That's correct, because they have no more Lancers. They've been taken out of service. All they have are the Hunter War Destroyers. And that's their only size class 4 at that point. That and a few variants.
Like I'm pretty sure that the Hydrans are still, like, the majority of their fusion ships are still in service. Like, they haven't been phased out in universe. So, I mean, maybe it's just a case of how the tournament rules are being set up or whatever, but I mean, there's still a lot of Stingers and, you know, ships that they're flying off. I mean, they are, like, Halbor units aside, they are still a heavily, like, hybrid carrier fleet, whatever like that. That's, so I mean, maybe it's just a case of, like, the this scenario rule is not quite, you know, fitting what it is. But I mean, in theory, anyway, there shouldn't really be an issue in terms of a person being able to, like, if they want to go all fusion, then they, with the corresponding fighters that they have. But the other thing, too, is that usually, I mean, just because you have like mech link refits on your ship doesn't necessarily mean that you have to, like, because some empires, I guess you have to go through like the Master Starship books, because there is a Hydra Master Starship book and a Lyran one, too. Some empires, the mech link refits are universal. Like, as soon as the year comes along, every ship in the fleet has the mech link installed. But others, they're optional, where even if it's such and such a year, then you don't have to have all of the mech links paid, especially because if you're not planning to buy the PFs to go on them or the interceptors or whatever. So that might be something worth like digging into in terms of making sure, because it doesn't necessarily seem very characterful for the tournament. He was setting up such a way to kind of like chop down the Hydrans, and, you know, in particular in that way. And also for the Lyrans and so forth, I mean, I'd have to double check, because they have updated Module C1 as well as the Lyran Master Starship book in terms of how up-to-date the various R section details are. But if somebody like doesn't necessarily want to take those PFs and just wants to have like a more kind of rounded Lyran or LDR squadron for that matter, then I don't necessarily believe that, historically speaking anyway, it'd be much of an obligation. I'll have to bring it up here. Paul, do you have Module C1 on your computer there?
Module C1?
Yeah. Do you have a book for that on there, on your computer?
No.
Okay. Hang on a second here. You don't have
the Master Starships manuals for both of those.
Yeah.
I looked at the SSDs of the Hydran BCHs, and that's not actually noted as a refit. It's noted, it's just on the SSD as these are mech links.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think that it's not an optional thing.
Like, if the rules, if the R section says that the ship is like a casual, like not a true PF tender, if it's a casual PF tender, then you don't necessarily have to basically buy the PFs, because it's an optional thing.
Right.
But if it's a ship that is basically designated as like a true PF tender, then I guess the onus would be that, you know, you have to have the PFs on it, whatever. But I'm just looking now. I'm trying to find the thing here. But yeah, especially that Hydran one. That sounds very kind of surprising. But
so anyway, I took umbrage with the here, so. You know, some races, they can bring almost nothing to the table except a certain fleet of a certain configuration. They have no options, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the Hydrans, it's kind of imposed by the rules. In the case of the Vudar, which I believe he allowed, it's just the fact that he's not allowing certain kinds of ships.
He's allowing the we have the Federation, the Klingon, the Romulans, the Klingons, twice, Zinnis, Gorn, Tholians, Hydran, Lyran, and Wynn, outside cluster only, Fish series or purchased on Orion hulls, Vudar or ISC.
So. The Wynn Fish ships are another issue, because every single one of them have casual PFs.
Well, there are casual PFs. Doesn't mean they have to have the PFs on them.
Well, it's just like with the Hydran BCHs.
But you don't have to buy the PFs to go on them.
Right.
Because I'm seeing here, even in module C1, I have it here, it says R11.R3. So for the Lyrans, it says, starting in Y178, mech links were added to the tractor beams of many ships. And it says that increases the BPV by 1 point for each mech link added. So it says most Lyran SSDs are showing with the mech links. And if they are used, the BPV must be added by 1 point per mech link. But in the most time, these are still casual mech links, whatever. So it doesn't say that all, like the mech link refit is universal. So you can not take it. It just means that you won't be able to take the PFs optionally if you wanted to. So that would still be, because I think most other empires, this it would basically have the same sort of thing where some refits, like, for example, it says that the refit is common in such a year and then universal in such and such a year. But when it comes to mech link refits and so forth, I don't see that. Let's see now here. So like Wildcat Battlecruiser, for example. Thanks. It says here, the Wildcat is a casual fast patrol ship tender and the repair box can be found. So yeah, it still doesn't say that it's a true fast patrol ship tender. So you could take a Wildcat, just don't bother buying the PFs and, you know, refits. So yeah, I guess, I mean, maybe it might be worth bringing it up to the guy running the tournament just to clarify if that was his intention or not, because I'd be surprised if he'd be basically forcing people to, you know, go down that route. So maybe it's one of those things that could be kind of, you know, factored in between now and the time the tournament starts, just to make sure that people aren't feeling like they're being ruled out of having the force that they want or they would otherwise take. So, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, that'd be good. I agree. I was also surprised to see that he
clarified whether or not the hydrants would be allowed to take.
I was surprised to see that he did not include the Jindarian, who have a tournament cruiser, but is not part of this other 500 point tourney.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me, really.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe there's not a big demand for it.
Yeah, and we're talking about open Jindarian space here.
Kind of a weird one to start with.
Yeah, Jindarians mainly, when they're in combat, they're combat in an asteroid field. That's their natural place. You know.
I agree, but
they do have a decent number of metal hull ships nowadays, so you could say that they're not allowed to take any of their asteroid ships. That this squadron is basically like a screening force. It's like patrolling the area beyond where the colonies are, so their asteroids are, so that it's to basically make sure that any intruder like an Andromedan or whatever is not getting too close to the point where they could harm the civilian population. That's how I'd suggest. Because I think it's something similar where in the Captain's Log battle groups, they basically usually restrict the Jindarians to metal hull ships only. I think that should be reasonable. Because there's a couple of pretty decent ones that they've been given in recent issues of recent SFB modules as well. So it's like a medium strike cruiser and the light and heavy ones that they had before and so on. So, I mean, it would definitely be interesting, but I think it would be fairer to basically, for them and for their enemies, to bar access to the metal hull ships.
Yeah, I agree. If the Jindarians were involved, that would be metal hull only. I agree. And the Jindarian tournament cruiser is based on their largest hull, their largest metal hull ship. But I think they can provide a pretty decent force out of their size class 4 metal hulls. The problem, I suppose, is that the Jindarian tournament cruiser is considered very weak.
Oh, it is very weak.
But and I played Jindarian in campaigns and had a lot of fun with them, but their asteroid ships are best when you put bombers on them. And all around, they tend to be very good at range 15 and not so good at range 3.
Exactly. Yeah, the thing is that from the looks of it, you know, PFs are basically, they're worth like 40 points.
Each.
So that's additional 40 points. So if, in theory, if you had a PF tender, you've got a dreadnought right there. If you had a full PF squadron. So basically, what you'd have is you'd have your PF tender, and then you'd have your squadron, and that would be it.
Yes, okay, so I agree.
if you're going to take a PF tender, you'd take an Ox PF tender, then you'd bring a squadron of frigates, maybe with a destroyer leader for a flagship, and that round you out for 550 pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I remember 500. An Ox carrier.
Well, at the moment, auxiliaries are not allowed. But I'm not going to understand that, because good grief, people.
Yes.
You know, those things are not
that's,
really...
That's another thing that the battle groups are good with in terms of saying no auxiliaries, no earlier ships, no National Guard ships. It has to be kind of like no spamming with shuttles and so on. Although I remember one time, Paul, you were given a mulligan in terms of the Andromedans, because you took a force that was all satellite ships, and so they let that pass. But
well, that was also for Peg Commander too.
Yeah.
Because he took a whole bunch of Vipers out, at least.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Well, the thing is in Federation Commander, when it comes to the amount of when it comes to couriers versus Vipers. The Vipers are cheaper. They have around the same amount of protection on PA panels, which in SFB they're not, but in FedCom they are. And they have around the same amount of weapons.
I agree. Yeah, go with the satellite ships every day.
You know, and it's like, and the thing is, I also used one specialized ship there, which was the Recon Cobra. So I have at least one displacement device in the whole thing. So that was kind of clever.
Yes.
Oh, to get back to the hydrants for a second, there is a thing here. Well, actually, I'm just looking at the module C1, the most recent edition, I think 2015 edition or so. How has it already been 10 years since that module first came out?
time flies, that's why.
Section where it specifically lists that there are certain carriers that count as quote-unquote true carriers.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything else, even if it's got like a whole bunch of stingers, does not count as a true carrier. It still counts as a casual carrier. So that's things like the Cavalier, the Iron Duke, the Trooper, and the Ullen CV. And those basically are... Apparently they're the ones that are allowed to have heavy fighters as well, because I think you have to have the... They can't launch heavy fighters out of the standard launch tubes. They have to have like dedicated. They have to basically give up regular fighter bay space or whatever. So there's not too many of the heavy stingers going around. But then there is actually a question as well that even if you basically allow a standard range of like the Ranger and so forth, do you basically put a limit on things like the Hellbore, the Stinger T, that sort of thing, or whatever you call it, the Stinger? The one that has the Hellbores, that sort of thing.
Right.
Because there, I have seen those kind of restrictions in place before as well, because they don't want people to like min-max their Stinger fighters either. Because that's the handy thing in FedCon, because yeah. FedCon basically limits, it reduces the number of Stingers that a Hydran line ship has. Like the Ranger only has 6 Stingers instead of 9, that sort of thing. But I'm just curious as to like, even if the Hydrans are allowed a broader variety of their fusion/stinger holes. Will that basically still, like, there be a limit? Should there be a limit in terms of how many of them they can replace with Hellbore fighters in this scenario?
Well, you've got it right that the true carriers in R9N1, I believe, are the only ones that are true carriers that can carry heavy fighters, substitute Stingers for heavy fighters. Mm-hmm. And I think they're set up to limit, they're limited on their Hellbore fighters, the Stinger H's, to only like 10% mm-hmm. of their force or something of that nature. I don't remember where the rule is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, well, you've got it right.
Perfectly reasonable to just basically say those true carriers, they're off the table. But the regular Hydran fleet is fine. Just maybe take a leaf from the battlegroup templates in terms of whether or not they should get the Hellbore Stingers or not. But yeah, so I actually don't see the thing about the Mechlink refit in Module C1 for the Hydrans. But I guess maybe they didn't necessarily have it. It just says fusion, plus refit and Y170, fusion refit and Y168. That's allowed them to hold the fusion. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say a fusion heavy fleet should be good to go. Whether it'll be successful in the game is another story, because if you've got a big enough map and you can run fast enough, then actually getting in range to hit with those fusions would be a problem. But,
well, that's one.
I mean, it's,
well, it's not unlimited. It's just a very large again, map.
Well, if I were playing the a Hydran fusion heavy, fighter heavy fleet, I would set the fighters up as an echelon on the gun line with the fusion ships like three hexes behind them or something, and just try to run the guy over at speed 15. Eventually, you're going to corner him. He can only shoot at fighters so long. And if you're running a pair of Rangers and a pair of Lancers, then you've got 24 fighters, which is more than the tournament allows. And but those are just stock cruisers, stock destroyers. And I think that you can easily just run the guy down just doing an echelon.
They have T-bombs in the tournament.
They may have T-bombs, but that means that you're getting to range 3 of the ship in order to be able to use them, or range 5 rather, because of the transporters.
Well, you don't need transporters. You can kick them right out while you're running away.
Well, yeah, but knowing that there's mines in the tournament, you would have to be crazy to be following in the same path as the enemy.
Well, and also remember that the T-bombs are not hidden.
Right.
There you go.
You can make your own mini minefields, basically, and use them as terrain against the fighters.
Yeah. And again, you get the fighters within range 10 of the enemy, and each one pops off a full alpha. That's 5 points of damage on average. Again, let's just say the 18 fighters. You know, you got a Hellbore ship instead of a fusion ship. At 18 fighters, you're looking at 90 points of damage at range 10. Unless there's an EW ship.
Well, there's, yeah, but I guess that's where the scout could come in handy as well, because it could loan ECM to a ship that's being targeted. So
that's really the only way you can do it, because the fighters have 4 points of ECM or ECCM built in, and then their home ship just gives them 2 more, and they're good.
Well, the other thing too is that if the Hydran takes a scout, that's one less carrier they've got, because I don't believe their scouts have fighters, or does it depend on the scout?
I think you're correct that they don't have fighters.
Yeah, so let's see now. There'd be like if they take a war cruiser scout, then that's a few more BPV that they're boiling off. I mean, they're getting a better scout, but they're getting less carrier space to go with it. And
that's true.
If they have to, it's usually good business to take at least one Hellbore ship anyway, or a hybrid ship maybe. Hybrids would have some Hellbores and maybe a fewer fighters than the pure fusion, whatever I have. But no, I think I get the feeling that there'd still be plenty of options, even if there needed to be a hard limit in terms of how many Stingers they were able to take. But, historically they'd be facing a bunch of ESGs with the Lyrans, or they'd have, the Klingons would have, like various, you know, seeking weapon options that they could use to try to sweat down the Stingers or try to, you know, keep at range, whatever. So, but probably wouldn't be good against seeking, you know, an Empire on the other side of Alpha that, you know, wouldn't want to have all those phaser Gs phasing down their plasmas and stuff. But I guess that's part of the fun of the tournament.
No, I probably would not want that at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe go for 24 fighters instead of 18. That's 2 squadrons, which, you know, as I say, that means a standard range, 2 standard Rangers, 2 standard Lancers, you know, standard, bog standard, regular destroyer and cruiser.
How much would all that be? You know,
what's that?
How much would that cost?
Let's see.
But remember, you only have 500 points. Yeah.
Here's another thing too, because it's before Y-182, so even if the Lyrans have casual PFs, they don't have the shield refit. They're actually relatively vulnerable in terms of shooting at them.
That's true. because the shield refit is year 182.
Mm-hmm. And isn't there there's some other refit that's in the Y-180s or something. I guess after Y-180s, it's relevant here. I'm just trying to think what it is. It's like, anyway, I have to double back and try to freaking remember it later. But there's some other thing. Oh, is it like the warp booster packs? Do they have them available, or the mega fighters? Maybe they should have a rule saying mega fighters, because like if the
year 180 is when you get dash packs for the fighters, but the PFs pretty much had warp booster packs right out of the gate first year. Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah, that's fair. So maybe it's mega fighters that they didn't have or something, or but they should probably say no mega fighters here, because that'd be definitely unfair for the Hydrans to have the only ones with those. If they have the only ones with fighters and they get to be mega fighters too.
Yeah, they're scary. They're real scary.
Although here's an interesting thing is that if there ever was a tournament that was set in Y-150, you'd have Stinger 1s. They only have Phaser 1s. They don't have Phaser Gs. And all those fusion ships are like are speed 27, so because they don't have the extra warp power. So in the long run, I do think that a middle years tournament would be very interesting in terms of like, and actually in the middle years context, that's where I think things like module R4G would be useful, because you'd actually be able to give the Romulans a fleet that's competitive, because R4G gives them all those Shadow of the Eagle, warp powered cruisers that match in with the era, and they'd be able to compete rather than be stuck with all those sublight ships that they had historically. So I think that would be a fair thing to compare to permit them in that circumstance.
I like that idea.
And it would be easier to fit in things like the Paravians too, because they don't have to worry about fighting against empires with plasma sabos. Like, they've got a pretty good middle year fleet, so they'd be able to mix it up. And even actually ISC players would have a chance to, I mean, their unrefitted ISC ships are still scary big, but they're not as scary as they are in Y-180. Like, no PPDs and no plasma Fs and no phaser refits, no plasma F side fighting for plasma Fs. So they're much more kind of like slightly meaner Gorns, but they're still more competitive in terms of like, if you're limited to 500 points, you can only take so many of them and so forth, whatever. So you're not basically able to bully your opponents the way that they would by the time of the pacification.
I like the idea. But to circle back to the Paravians, I think you're going to get a lot of people who want to get the Paravians out of the tournament. The tournament Paravian cruiser is based off the command cruiser. It's been in Starfleet Online for several years, pretty much ever since the Paravians came on the site. And I've flown it several times, and I've found nobody that can beat it. And I think the standard idea is that they're too powerful. Say again?
Oh, gosh, that's the tournament Paravian has what, 8 1s and 5 QWTs, if I'm remembering.
I think it's 6 phaser ones and 5 quantum wave torps.
Right. And because of the power curve on those, if all you're interested in doing is just keeping up an attrition battle, you can almost fly it like a medium speed Zenti and just absolutely stay at range. And yeah, it's an interesting style of cruiser to play. The thing about it is that it really is game breaking in certain areas, but it doesn't survive very easily against somebody who's willing to just throw up right up in your grill and drop a whole bunch of photons in your face.
I agree. I wrote a tactics page on it, posted on my website about the Paravian cruiser, and that's exactly right. That if you're able to swallow the first bolt of quantum wave torps and just get close to them, you could just smack them around every day. Nobody's willing to do that because they see 5 quantum wave torps doing, I don't know, what, 9 points of damage when they come barreling in, and they don't want to take the damage, take the 40-some damage.
What the other aspect
well,
that makes
spread
the quantum
out over
wave torpedo
shield arc though, like that's not concentrators.
No, it's like you get a little bit of splash damage, but the thing is that it takes so much concentrated phaser power to knock one down. They might as well be plasmas for that.
I advocate that you don't even bother to use phasers on the quantum wave torps because it's such a bad deal for you.
That's right. There's no point in doing it. The only thing that you can really do, particularly in the tournament against quantum wave torpedoes, is to weasel them, and they don't do enough damage to justify it.
I agree.
But the other thing
unless
too is that because they require warp power to overload. Like you're not getting too much damage. It's basically the equivalent damage of like a PPD that's well aimed. Of one
that's
PPD
true.
Rather. Maybe one and a quarter PPDs rather. So per turn rather.
That's true. But the thing is that most of the time, if you're going to play the Paravians the way the rules are written for them, you don't actually overload unless you run up towards the very end of the turn and you have a impulse one opportunity for an alpha strike. That's about the only time you're really going to want to do it, because if mm-hmm. otherwise it just doesn't make sense.
I usually like to overload on the first turn, speaking as a tournament Paravian, overload on the first turn, just overload two of them, not all five of them.
Right.
Generally, you've got enough power. You've got 38 power and only 30 warp, but you got enough power to overload two of them. And that keeps the other guy from wanting to come in on you, because then you're going to kill a shield, do a few internals, and he may or may not get his shot.
That's right.
So I like to overload the first couple just to dissuade the overrun.
The mind game is very important with the Paravians, more so than most of the others when it
yes.
comes down to it.
But if you fly them like a Kestrel, if you just do like a saber dance or something, a plasma ballet, the Paravian does very, very well.
But to go to the 500 point thing, I think that would basically, especially because if it was middle years, because they don't have the APR refit and they don't have their war cruisers or anything like that. So some of their ships you kind of would have to take more care, especially because if you're in an electronic warfare environment, like I think that it's easier to basically EWOA the splash elements, because the torpedoes have. I think it's ECM they have, but they don't have ECCM. It's like one of the series,
no,
like the reverse, but regular.
Yeah, they don't have ECCM. They have ECM, mm-hmm. and that's defensive only for the weapon.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes phasering them down such a raw deal.
You don't get the
right.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that makes them kind of annoying in mass.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes,
by the way, I was just looking at module C2, and it seems here that for the ISC, historically their rear firing plasma torpedo refits, it looks like it basically took until Y181 for it to be universal. So it could be that there'd be justification, like say for example, if it was found that they were too powerful in the tournament with the plasma refit, the rear plasma refit, you could say that your squadron hasn't had it. They haven't had the. They haven't. It's not their turn yet, so they have to make do without them.
It could be, but I don't think it's going to be a big issue. Sure, they've got their cruisers got like four of them in the rear, but they can't use hardly any of them against ships. So if you've got attrition units, then they're very powerful. Unfortunately, we've made rules that say no attrition units, basically. So they're useless.
Mm-hmm. So send them against the Lyrans and Hydrants.
Well, yeah, but the Lyran PFs will die very quickly to them, and the Lyran and the Hydran fighters will Gatling them, and it won't be as good.
Well, gentlemen, it's been a wonderful night, but we need to shut things down because it's getting that. It's getting late, especially for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I I hijacked the, because actually, if, when I was really going to hijack the talk by talking about the Nicosians, but I somehow held off from that. But I ended up hijacking your talk anyway, because I know you wanted to talk about your squadron selection. So
that's fine.
Although, you know, maybe you could ask Jeff if he'll let you take a Saltorian force, and then you'll have a whole new force to pick.
Yeah,
I like that idea. You should do the Saltorians.
Oh, I'd love to do Saltorians.
Yeah, just
really would, because then you have the shield crackers and you have the hit and run raids that are actively important, more important than in a regular tournament where you're playing in the fishbowl.
Right.
And of course, then you have something to fight the Tholian when they're webcasters.
There you go. Yeah, and, you know, Jeff was going back and forth about the webcasters. Mm-hmm. You bring in the Saltorians, you don't have to worry about it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just ask him if it's okay to use the battle group precedent where you have to use the ships that they and the rules so you don't get T-bombs, but you just have to try to figure it out without them.
Yeah, that's one thing.
Also means no scouts, though, so I'd hope you'd be okay with that.
Yeah. Weird. Anyway, need to shut these down. Gary, it's been wonderful to have you around, and I don't mind you sidetracking it, because it definitely was an interesting and good discussion about the 500 BPV tournament, which we started last week and continued on this week. So thank you so much. So you have a good night.
Okay. No problem. Okay. So, yep, and feel free to pop into that Nicosian topic anyway.
We'll do.
Lug Jeff,
hold on.
Yes, sir.
Jeff, it's been wonderful to have you around. And absolutely. As always, you stay safe driving out there, man.
I'll do it.
Okay, great. You have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Doug, yes, now you can plug.
Yay, Gamers of Winter, 2 weeks, roughly. We are down to 2 weeks away, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Online registration for badges is open until middle of next week, but you don't need that if you don't get to do that. You can still show up and get a badge at the door. It's just more convenient than having a badge ready when you get there and the payment all are taken care of. Yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. Paul will be running some stuff. And we have other things to do besides SFB, but if you want to run some SFB or F&E or anything at all, you can contact me through our Facebook group or through email that's listed on the website for gamersofwinter.net. So there you go. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, thank you. So, you didn't get to hear my fleet. And maybe, just maybe, we will be able to... talk about maybe a Saltorian fleet. I'll broach the subject with Jeff to see if he'd be willing to give me let me do that. We'll have to wait and see. If I don't, I don't. You know, no big deal. The one thing I did think about, which was, I don't think there was any limitations on the commander's options, except for basically the 50 points that you have, or possibly even more if you don't spend all 500. So, do we have a limitation on the commander's options? Don't know. Other than what you can do. At least that's what I understand from the rules at the moment. Anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.